The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bizarre.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
This is Bazan, the Bizarre and Weird Fiction Podcast. With me, your host, Mr. Frank Zongers. So happy to have you back on Bazong once again. You know I love it when you join us for another round of weird and wacky fiction talk. This week is no different. This week actually is a little different because actually this is the first author interview for 2019. And I could think of no more appropriate author to interview as the first author of 2019 on Bazong than a writer who had his book come out on January 1st, 2019. With that in mind, this week's guest is the one and the only Mr. Charles Austin Muir. Charles is somebody I've been aware of in the community for a long time, but never really realized how robust a bibliography he's had for all this time, you know? I know just recently he's had something out with Rooster Republic and his new book that is called This Is a Horror Book from Clash Media. Just came out. But when I agreed to do this interview with Charles and sat down and looked at his bibliography, I was like, holy mackerel, this guy's been publishing since, well, like, oh, I don't know, 2018, since like 2008, 2011. And that's just the stuff that I see. Charles has been in the game since the 90s. Like, he's been writing for a long time, and I just did not realize that. And that's one of those cool things, like, doing these interviews is getting to know somebody in a far different way than my perception of them is. And I hope that's one of those successes that we have as Bazong doing the show, is that maybe you two Zongers out there have this sort of impression of the interviewees that I do. You see them one way, and then you learn they're far more, maybe deeper or just different than what your impression was. And this is one of those interviews, so I'm very happy that I got to sit down and talk to Charles and get to know him a lot better, because he's a really cool dude. I found through this interview that I really commiserate with his work and understand his work far more than I realized. And it was a really good time having this talk with Charles and getting to know what his writing is all about. So I hope you enjoy the interview as much as I enjoyed interviewing Charles Austin Muir. And I'm probably botching that name because that's one of those things. I had it. I think it was Charles Austin Muir. I forgot how I said it in my head. I'm saying it wrong. And the more I think about it, the more I'm going to ruin it. So we'll just leave it up to the Bazong interview of the one, the only, Mr. Charles Austin Muir. Oh, give us the gong. I'd like to welcome to Bazong this week the first guest of 2019. And what more appropriate guest to have on Bazong for 2019 than somebody we haven't even talked to yet at all in Bazong history, but he's got so much stuff going on. I feel like it's going to be his year. So welcome for 2019, our first guest, the one and only Mr. Charles Austin Muir. Charles, welcome to Bazong.
Thank you so much, Mr. Frank.
It is a pleasure.
I love your show.
Oh, thank you so much. I love when I have not only a great author on, but a fellow Zonger. I love that shit like crazy. Now, I've seen you. You're out and about in the bizarre world, constantly see you in the groups and in the community. But I hadn't really seen a ton of work from you until just very recently. But really, when we agreed to do this show and I looked up your bibliography, you've really been writing for quite a while. And it looks like for the better part of your writing career, shall we say, you were pretty focused on short stories. You want to tell us how you got into writing and why you took so long focusing on short stories?
Yeah, I'm ridiculously slow for one, but I went to college back in the early 90s. This dates me. And I kind of stopped writing. And then when I got out of college, I couldn't write a line. I majored in English. And I was so blocked that I sat down one day to write a description of a sunset that I thought would be cool in my journal. And 45 minutes later, I'd crumpled up everything I'd written in the sun had set. And I was like, I have a problem. I can't write. And I kind of want to do that again. And so it took me about 5 years really to kind of get myself back to writing. Have you heard of a book called Writing Down the Bones?
I can't say I have, no.
The author takes like this sort of Zen approach to writing where you just kind of do these timed writing, or maybe some people call it journaling, where you just write straight without stopping and you learn to kind of breathe into it. And then after a while you kind of build up your muscles again. And then just kind of like maybe you're going to write about something you did last summer, but then you try to remember, like work in something that the light looks like coming through the window. And in that kind of way, you start building up muscles for telling stories again without thinking about dialogue mechanics or where do I find an agent and stuff like that. Cause that's where I just started to get too hung up back in the late 90s. And then after a while, I finally sold a story like in 2005 to an online site called Bizarium. It was a sci-fi-ish story. And then I made my first sale at, I think it was a semi-pro rate, to Cthulhu Sex Magazine. Do you remember them?
Like Cthulhu Sex Magazine? No.
Yeah. Cthulhu Sex Magazine, Blood, Sex, and Tentacles. And they had like great covers, great interior art. They paid me and gave me my contributor copy, and that was like amazing. And I just figured this is what it is. Is you write a story, submit, and then you write the next one. And back then, you'd like send off for the guidelines and look through Writer's Market. I think online was just kind of like Ray Land was just, I had just become aware of Ray Land and stuff like that. And I was kind of into this essay by Neil Asher, a sci-fi writer, who said, this is what you do. You may never leave the small presses, but this is how you do it, is you just write a story, submit, and eventually they get longer, and eventually, hopefully, you place them somewhere decent. And for years and years, my stuff was just pretty short. And actually, the two books that I have out now, they are collections of short stories, so I'm just starting kind of developing my first book-length work. So for over 10 years, I've been just here and there placing short stories in like horror markets. And then I got in touch with the Bizarro community, and that changed my sensibility, and then things kind of grew from there.
That's pretty incredible, because you're coming from that point in time where there was no digital publishing. You were trying to work your way through those old tired cogs of the old printing presses and the big guys and everything, and you had I guess you were mailing manuscripts and all that kind of crazy stuff, like way back in
the day. I would get those envelopes with my handwriting and my own address on it through the mail slot. And I got.
But there is something.
So, yeah.
There is something like, I mean, you really cut your teeth when you're doing that stuff. I mean, that's gritty work. That's work that when I think about, and you know, when you say you dated yourself, I think we're pretty close in those dates. So I knew those days, but back then I had never considered writing seriously, because, you know, I thought, I've spoken about it before. I thought like, oh, well, in order to write a book, you know, you got to go and you got to go to college and get a degree, blah, blah, blah. And I was always scared of like sort of that thing. Like, you know, I wrote stuff all the time, but I thought like the creativity would almost like get sucked out of me by becoming educated on the subject. And, you know, it just never seemed like a real possibility until like the digital publishing thing came along. And I realized, you know, those gates, they're there, but they're not necessarily, you don't need them to have good work or anything like that necessarily. So it's kind of, I always like to hear those people who did come up through that and did the struggle and hearing about all the manuscripts and sending them out and all these giant envelopes and just all the paper.
Really on it.
And I guess even
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, even I'm sure you had the old like word processor machines too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. One, the social side of that too, with being pre-social media, is that I wasn't like a huge fanboy as far as like going to conventions and such. I think that would have given me a big boost to actually be around people. I was just kind of in my own, you know, little space, just tossing stories out here and there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could have sped things up a bit, but I think maybe I'm just slow. You know, it was like, and then once anthology, like as you said, there are a lot more options with the internet, which is good and bad, because then some stuff gets out that I was like, oh, I kind of wish looking back I hadn't been so eager to get my name out there. But and then the anthologies, the magazines, the opportunities there weren't quite what they were, you know, pre-2008, at least in my experience, but the anthologies started coming up, and then you had a chance to kind of get your name in with some bigger name writers and a little bit better pay. And so that's kind of where I was working up toward until I just kind of lucked into the two books that I have out now.
Yeah,
took a different change in direction. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll move into that, but I just still want to continue. Like when you just said you started getting into those like circa 2008 when digital publishing starts really taking off. And I mean, I'm blown away to see the names you're in these anthologies with. Like we were talking about like Ray Garten, Jonathan Mayberry, Jeff Strand, Adam Howe. Like you've gotten into anthologies with some big name people, but you've also been around that whole, like you've been around the scene all this time. So, how did you hook up with like get in an anthology with Ray Garten? Like he edited the anthology room with him, 18 Highways, I think it was. How did you wind up with that?
Well, even before that, there was Gray Matter Press. Have you heard of them? Or
yeah,
they're like a straight horror.
Yeah,
I lucked out with that one. I just saw a submissions call, and they sent out a story that it was a broad enough subject that I just thought, well, I already have this thing. It's been rejected a few times. I'll work on it some more. Sent it to them, and then they gave me a shot. So I kind of broke through there. And then they got even bigger, and they had another anthology, Peel Back the Skin. I did the same thing with them, and by then they're, you know, paying even better. And I mean, I got in with like Graham Masterton, and like he was like, that was incredible to me.
Yeah.
To get in with his names, and I was just like, so you know what I was telling people is, have you heard the story? I don't know if I think it's true about it. Live Aid. I think it was this guy just kind of got on stage with all the stars and nobody like knew that he wasn't supposed to be on stage and he just started singing with them.
I've not heard that story, but I can see that as being a plausible
sound video. Yeah. Of this guy who just kind of went, what the heck? And nobody, they just kind of looked at him like, I don't know, Springsteen and Tina Turner, whoever was there, they just kind of like, it just kept going. I feel like that's kind of like how I got under the table of contents.
That's
how I kind of, I've never met Anthony Rivera or Sharon Lawson in person. They're super awesome editors. And then for 18 Wheels of Horror, Eric Miller, just he's a great publisher and a friend. He was also a friend of my cousin Brian Muir, who wrote Critters. Did you ever see? You must have seen Critters, right?
Of course.
My cousin, Brian Dominic Muir, he wrote that in high school, like way before Gremlins and Ghoulies. Actually, it's his birthday today. He died like in 2010, but it's his birthday today. That's kind of interesting.
Wow.
When he died, I met a bunch of his awesome friends in L.A. that he'd always kept that life separate. And so I met his friend Shane Bitterling, who's a screenwriter. And he's a great friend of mine. And Eric Miller, who then was interested in starting a publishing company, and Courtney Joyner, he wrote like Prison and Class of 99. And he's also like a Western author and doing all kinds of cool things. But so that's how, and then I met Eric and he gave me a chance and let me into a couple of his collections. And then 18 Wheels, he was starting to get bigger names by then because his first one, Hell Comes to Hollywood, had sold so well.
So that's cool. You were almost like, I don't know, like the Nicolas Cage maybe of like the horror scene back in the early 2000s there. You got that family connection, and now maybe like you're going to take that and just blow up bigger than that now, like a couple of years later. It helped to have that connection. It was sort of a foot in the door for you, I guess, too.
Yeah, it was kind of parallel. Like that was a big help from Eric. And then Grey Matter Press was just like a separate thing where it was like my one kind of breakthrough where like nobody knew me. Yeah.
So moving forward through, I mean, you got all these series of anthologies you've been in, and obviously you got to be doing good work because nobody's going to just take, you're not going to get into these things writing pure crap. So you got something going on for you, regardless of your connections. So we move up into the world. How do you come across Bizarro? Where on the line do you stumble into Bizarro?
Yeah. So, let's see, it was about 2011 or somewhere in there. And I was, my job wasn't doing so well, and layoffs were inevitable, and more work was being piled on everyone with the reduced staff. I was writing, but I was just kind of stuck, as you're just not happy with things in general. And I was writing straight horror and trying to go for that like Thomas Ligotti kind of voice, and it's just not really suited to me. And I was just thinking, like, when I don't do it well, it's really, really noticeable. And I just thought, there's so much fun in, like, my text messages with my friends where we just get kind of goofy and weird, and it's just creative. And I thought, and that's so far the opposite of what I write. And, I don't write about anything. It's in my own, like, everyday life. And it's not like you need to. I mean, if you want to write historical fiction or, you know, Lovecraftian fiction, and you're not talking about 7-Eleven and stuff like that, that's fine too, whatever you want to do. But I felt like I wanted something more of that kind of goofiness and contemporary pop culture kind of thing in the text that I have with my friends into my stories. Cause I felt like at least then I could start talking about stuff that I never mentioned cars and the way cars look and stuff. I just thought that could really kind of band or enrich what I was writing somehow. And the Oregonian, that's the local newspaper here, one of them, ran a story on Carlton Mellick and Bizarro Khan. And I'd read that a few years earlier and just thought, wow, that's really crazy. And then flash forward to 2011 or whenever it was. No, it was like 2013. By this time, I was getting laid off. And I thought about, like, God, I'm a writer, and I've been in a few things, but I, like, other than my cousin's friends who are now my friends, I don't know any writers. And I'm pretty sure there are a lot of writers in Portland, let alone everywhere else. And maybe I should actually kind of, like, be in situations where I might meet a few. Mm. And I thought about Bizarro Khan. I went on the website, and, you know, I looked through the testimonials and just the description and the pictures, and it was such a different, it just, to me, struck such a different image than what I had ever encountered before. Because I guess I should back up and say I had like kind of two parallel lives going on, and not everyone needs to have it compartmentalized this way, but I did. As I spent, part of why I was so slow with writing is because at the time, I was really spending a lot of time training to be a competitive power lifter. So I was spending a lot of time in the gym just trying to get super as big and strong as I could. And that really taxed my nervous system. It's part of it because I could have done things recovery wise, I could have done better. But part of it's just the nature of the sport. I mean, if you really want to try and be your best, even if your best isn't impressive beyond that, you're going to end up hurting, and you're going to end up tired. And so I'd end up, you know, try to drink a glass of water. I'd be shaking late at night, and it just took a lot of my energy. And I ran around with a bunch of guys. I'd never heard of the term toxic masculinity, back then. but it had evolved to where it had become like that. Just a bunch of alpha dudes. I mean, they were the interaction when everyone got together. It could become a lot of alpha dude stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had injured myself, and here I was. So now I'd injured myself, lost 80 pounds. I was losing my job. I kind of just didn't know what I was about anymore. And, you know, I was like the guy with the flannel shirt and the baseball hat back and the metal music. And there's just a certain kind of way that you present yourself when you want to be the big dude. And then here I was like injured and on the verge of being unemployed. And I was looking at this BizarroCon website and I was like, this looks like everything that the guys I hung out with would have just been like, you know, F that. Look at, you know, I mean, it's the kind of thing they would have made fun of. At least some of them would have. And
yeah.
So then, but that's not, you know, I never did that. I never liked that aspect of when we would get together.
Right.
But I was still the meathead guy, you know, and I was used to more like just big dudes wearing like Muscle Milk shirts and checking each other's arms to make sure that, you know, theirs were still bigger and that kind of stuff. Seeing more creative, being immersed in more creative environments was kind of alien to me. And so, you know, when I got my first Cthulhu Sex Magazine, my contributor copy, and I handed it to my training partner and friend back then, he just kind of looked at it and like tossed it aside and walked off. So I had this kind of separate existence where every now and then I could like squeak out a story. And, you know, and then the rest of the time was all just gym stuff and work. And so now I'm just like, well, that's not my life anymore. And so I signed up for BizarroCon. It scared the hell out of me. Registered for it and got my, there's a lot of change, you know, for me, just losing my job 13 years and losing all my sense of identity, just in my body and everything. And then signing up and getting the hostel at Edgefield. I'd never stayed at a hostel. I'd never been to Edgefield. Never been to a writer's convention. By then I'd read a few books like Cameron Pierce and Carlton Mellick and I think Kevin Donahue and, you know, some of those books. I was like, this, I want to know a little bit more of what this is about. Cause this too, like my texts and stuff is definitely a little bit different.
Right.
And as I was reading these things, I was like, wow, you can just say things that way. You can just tell us, you can just put that down on the page like that. That's cool. This could really kind of help. This could really kind of show me a new way. So, you know, with my limited reading of Bizarro at the time and my being at a crossroads and being like, I need to change. I went to BizarroCon and I was that guy. It was like 4 o'clock. I thought there was like, you were supposed to show right up at the registration promptly at 4 o'clock. And it wasn't quite that way, you know. It was like a reunion kind of feel back then, and so yeah, that's how I got into BizarroCon, and then from there on, it just year after year of going back and making more connections and reading more. I kept thinking of myself as a straight horror guy, and the first reading I did there, it was a straight horror story. Mm-hmm. From 18 Wheels, actually, but the more I started hanging out, I kind of turned a corner. And I took a workshop with John Skip and a story came out of there that ended up being in my first book that just came out last year. And that was when I realized I've really made the turn. Every time I try to write horror, I end up doing something like goofy again.
And this was, it was like, I guess the whole, That 2011 BizarroCon, it was the right thing at the right time when you needed it. And I guess changed you in a lot of ways, in a great many ways, you know, as a person, as a writer. That's like some inspirational kind of stuff that's going on there for you. So you said like you had some exposure reading it. I guess you enjoyed it enough to take the chance and go there and break out of a shell, so to speak. Definitely, you know, break out of a shell like you said. You had an image, sort of that bodybuilding image, which I get that, especially back in those days, everything was like, you know, the Breakfast Club. You had the jocks and the beauty queens and everybody like stayed in their own camps. It wasn't cool to be a nerd back then. Like that wasn't it wasn't so easy to say like I know the name of the stormtrooper that cleaned out the toilets on the Death Star in the first Star Wars movie. Like you would never say anything like that. It's not as easy to assimilate. Yeah. That's a big thing is BizarroCon. You know, it lets you do that. It lets you open up that side of yourself that I guess you had to repress because of the circles you were running in, for better or worse. But here you come out the other side, like just completely transformed, right?
Yeah, totally. That first opening ceremony actually was in 2013. I think I kind of muddled the dates in my story, but the first opening ceremony, I was sitting on the floor and I was like, what the hell have I gotten myself into? The fire was going. I was surrounded by people who were utterly in appearance, unlike the circles I ran in. And I was like, no, this is awesome. This is amazing. This needed to happen.
Did you ever find, because you're like the big bodybuilder, like you're still all jacked up and everything, was there sort of an image that people looked at you, you know, sort of, I have to imagine, even like if I had seen you, like, what's the big meathead guy doing here? You know, there's almost that image of like, people like that don't read, you know, is that something you had to sort of fight off?
No, the biggest I ever got was I weighed like 235 and I'm 5'8". So I was like fairly big, you know, but not like I wasn't a monster. And then it helped me to lift like I did. And like I said, I wasn't like a freak or anything, but then I got so injured that I lost 80 pounds. So by the time I got to BizarroCon, I weighed like what I weighed in high school. I weighed like 150 and nobody would have known any better.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then and I've only worked my way back up just over really slow rehab up to like 165. So it's like, I just look like, you know, just a regular guy.
No, I kind of think you look like
everyone's Rock. Oh, go ahead.
I don't know. I think you kind of look like The Rock.
Well, thank you. That's yeah. I always try to like head people off a little bit by like, oh yeah, you know, the little version, right? Or the
the Pebble.
Because he's such a monster.
Yeah. No, but that's good that you've gotten back into it to find that balance, I guess, is probably where you're headed now, right? To kind of not let that go entirely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally different mindset that I take when I'm like when I exercise, and you know, and now it's become mainstream. So people are like, I did deadlifts today, and I did this, and I'm like, yeah, that's cool, but it's just, you know, so what. Great that you're moving. It's not the big thing. But it's become mainstream. So, like, the things I took for granted that I've been doing since I was, like, 13, and people are discovering it now and getting excited. And it's great, but it's a little bit different way of speaking about it than I would just from all my experiences. It's like, you know, even back in the day when we were lifting heavier, it's like, yeah, okay, you squatted that, but who cares, you know?
Yeah.
You care. Your friends care. That's about it, but... That was, again, before social media and before everything became so – fitness became mainstream and before everything became integrated. I mean, back then, like you said, the Breakfast Club comparison is perfect. Like that's – not everyone compartmentalized the way I did even back then, but I did. I was just like you were saying. I was over in this corner and couldn't really integrate too well with other – or, you know.
Yeah. You needed that jarring experience just to get yourself to – to do those other things that you love. So now you do this. So now you get in on this skip thing and you sort of introduce yourself to writing, you know, what you can be Bizarro. You keep talking about this, you know, this sort of pivot. I guess you went from horror to Bizarro, or at least, you know, your stuff is still, grounded in horror, but it's got, would you say because of going to BizarroCon, because of doing those workshops with Skip and the like, and just continually exposing yourself to that community, that your writing has naturally taken on a more Bizarro tone?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I feel like I found my voice and kind of like the thing that I like to do. Not that it won't like evolve, I hope, but like I took, so in like 2016, I think I took a workshop, and this is the turning, the kind of like that turning point where John Skip had this assignment and where these two characters are like walking toward a destination and one is trying to feel out the other because the other, what they're doing, because the other knows more. And then there's supposed to be a payoff when they reach the destination and the third character comes out. And I was like, the heck do I do with that? Uh-huh. And then I was like, I had this sort of human centipede idea. And I thought, well, that's done, right? And then I was like, well, what if I just wrote about the dudes I used to, like, kind of like the kind of dudes I used to hang out with, like that whole scene.
Yeah.
And then just glued them all together in like this sort of big spider-like creature, and I wrote a little the assignment based on that, and he came to class and said, I thought Charles didn't understand the assignment correctly at first, because I was like, why does he have all these characters? And then halfway down the page, I realized, oh, these are all one character. And it just got, he was just like, So encouraging about it that I read it at the BizarroCon. Whatever I was planning to read before in my reading slot, I decided to go with that.
Uh-huh.
And I that was my second reading, but like people were really just laughing their asses off, and I was like, "This is great! I've never had that experience. I want to do like more of that." So I started to get goofy, but goofy in my own way and not like I read these other stories and I feel like that's what goofy is supposed to be. It was like my own kind of goofy. And then from there, just even if I just sit down to write a straight horror story, like Lucas Mangum and Brendan Vedito, we decided to do a chapbook together. Each of us would contribute a horror story to it. It's called Forest of Sex and Death. And the one I came up with was just goofy. Like it just ended up, it's like I can't not be goofy for whatever reason.
Oh man, I feel that. I feel that in a big, bad way. I know what you're talking about. I've sat down many a time and I just did two things that were both, I got sucked into a zombie anthology. I'm like, Jesus, like if there's something I loathe, it's zombies. And I got sucked into doing this anthology and I'm like, and I felt, you know, compelled to kind of be straight about it because it was very zombie anthology. And I was doing my best, but by the end of it, it turned into this crazy ass, basically tribute to Lansdale's Drive-In. And it really ran off the rails. And, you know, I'm submitting it and everybody's telling, well, this thing's batshit crazy. I'm like, really? That's probably about the most straightest thing I've ever written in a long while here.
Yeah.
I just can't but help that, even when I'm sort of expected, quote unquote, to write something not off the rails, a little more tethered, working with other people on projects. But it just, I can't help it, like you said.
And I don't know if this, you know, pops into your head, but I'll wonder, like, I'm not crapping on the stuff, you know, like horror or the conventions or whatever. I love it, but I just can't, you know, so. You know, like there's the clown that's like, they just, rather than actually try, they just kind of screw around. And I take it really, you know, I mean, I take it like, I do, I love what I'm doing. And maybe to some it might, I don't know, it might seem like, hey, you're just screwing around, not trying hard enough or whatever. Does that make any sense?
Oh, totally.
Like, I guess, I've known people that were like, dude, why don't you just, yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's exactly like, a big thing I find myself doing a lot, just when I'm just kind of checking out Twitter and everything, and you see how bad, I feel awful for doing it, but I don't, because I can't help myself. It's like, you'll see writers, I'm honored and humbled to, like, everybody has this sort of serious, you know, honored and humbled to announce that I'm, and I just, it's not, like, I get the same reaction if I get into something. I'm like, oh my God, I am honored and humbled, but I can't do that, so I have to goof on shit. Or, like, they just, everybody's, the Bram Stoker preliminaries came out today. Yeah. And I'm always like, yeah. Oh, hey, yeah. 3 years running, a non-considerate for the Bram Stoker Award. You know, that's the sort of anti-take on it. And it's, like you said, I'm not shitting on anybody, but it's, you kind of look at it as, you know, the funny side of it, I guess, is to take a chuckle at and a poke at people, because we're all like sort of in the same boat. But like, yeah, you do feel like, I hope nobody's taking this the wrong way.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's not like I'm not. It's kind of like, okay, I'll compare it to like karaoke. Like someone goes up and they just crap on the song, and maybe you're like, sure, that's that Total Eclipse of the Heart, and it's a cheesy song, but you don't have to crap on it. You can be silly with it by doing it well, you know what I mean? And still be like just kind of goofy.
Yeah, yeah.
But like,
go ahead.
And like with the Twitter thing, exactly. Like, I've never met him, but I love like what Douglas Hackle does.
Oh yeah.
And I'll look at his social media. It's like he won't be on there, and then it'll just be like some weird typographical characters or a video of him impersonating Corey Feldman doing a dancing.
Yeah.
And it's like in the midst of all this other stuff, there's that, you know, and it's just like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, he's like a breath of fresh air in this sometimes. I don't know if you get this because you do have that goofiness or whatnot to your writing. Is I also find it sort of when I'm at like horror conventions or around people being serious writers, that when you say like, yeah, you know, I'm the horror comedy guy or whatnot, and you get a lot of people like kind of like you know, like you are, like they are taking offense to, like, you can't goof on this stuff. It's very serious, and it's a deeper look at the human condition. And I'm like, oh, so sometimes I do find legitimately people do kind of scoff at the horror stuff. I think that's the struggle for any sort of a comedy writer, especially horror comedy writer, where it's the antithesis of what, you know, the serious stuff of the genre is. And sometimes people, I don't know, think you are sort of poking fun at it. You're not contributing a positive image to the genre or something. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I'll wish that I had like a more unified kind of, something more unified quality to like everything that I've been writing, but it's all like different. It's all different. It's not all like a certain kind of, oh, he does that one kind of horror story or whatever.
Right, right.
Maybe it's coming out wrong. I mean, that's a good thing. That's really cool when you can like a collection that has like a unified feel to it, and you know, like a Thomas Ligotti kind of a thing.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a straightforward horror story, and then there's like all this kind of meta stuff that I've been doing. But yeah, I mean, the people that like the community that I've been involved with, online, you can get a sense of like, oh my God, is this just like I'm putting this really dumb thing out? And but you know, I've been getting some positive feedback, and then going to places like BizarroCon and just keeping in touch with the community, and then I'm like, no, I mean, there are people who are, they're into this kind of thing, and they get what you're doing, or at least there are those that get what you're doing, and you that's partly why you do it.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Totally, totally. And I think in a Bizarro community situation, it's a little easier for that community to swallow those goofy pills if that would be something, you know. They're just a little more open to it. Do you find too, now that you have this exposure and you're writing to Bizarro, that you're less likely to also be like Bizarro horror or anything like that? Like you might, like you say, kind of just this genre-less type of thing, or maybe it's just straight Bizarro that you're writing?
I'm not sure.
Do you always feel like there's sort of that horror theme to what you're writing? Like that always just kind of creeps in?
Yeah, I mean, there's usually some kind of something dark that makes its way in there. Especially like there's some of the like dark male psyche kind of stuff that I like to explore.
Yeah,
just like maybe just because of the, you know, just the type of lifestyle I used to have. I don't know. I really like getting into that dark male psyche.
It's creepy. Almost like a psychological.
And just the hidden parts of the self and how that manifests, particularly for men, because that's what I know, you know.
That's cool. And that's definitely sort of like a, I guess like a unique branding for you. You're like there's not a big grouping of bodybuilder writer bizarro guys out there. So that sort of gives you a pretty unique voice in and around the community.
Yeah, and there's certainly like, you know, fit, jacked writers in the communities, but I guess my experience is just the circles that I used to run with, and then the injuries that I went through, and mm-hmm. the kind of like the changes that I went through, and now I'm also like I teach therapeutic exercise mm-hmm. at a chiropractor's clinic, so then I have that kind of like awareness
yeah.
comes into it. So even though I kind of like it's kind of fun to just say like, hey, I write like bro bodybuilding horror or something like that.
Right.
Which is, you know, there's an element of that. It's also, you know, there's like for sure bigger, fitter people out there writing than me, but it's just they didn't mess themselves up necessarily like in the same way that I did.
Right. I mean, you still have you have Rath James White out there. He's not necessarily bizarro, but he sure is extreme horror and stuff and has that perspective. Mm-hmm. But your experience is, you know, it's different from his, and you present it in a much different way than he would. So, you know, it's still a unique perspective. Obviously, I'm not saying like you're the only one with this experience. Part of it is part of the reason why people dig it is they're connecting with it. They get it. You know, even if maybe they weren't bodybuilders, or maybe they had everybody's been to the gym, so they have those sort of experiences and stuff like that. So, you know, that's the sort of thing I think you have that sort of unique take that not everybody comes from that sort of experience, that background that you've had.
Yeah, it's such a natural voice. When I write those stories, like about the bodybuilding spider rangers and that stuff like that, it's just so natural to kind of have fun with those guys. Like originally I had them being real D-bags, and then I realized, well, yeah, they're D-bag bros, but you can also have them be decent people in a way too.
Yeah.
You know, there's stories where it's like, yeah, you were bullied, and so you think those guys that look like they lift are kind of just one-dimensional pieces of crap, but that's not necessarily the case. And, you know, like the guys I hung up, some of them were very smart, some of them were well-read, or they, you know, and maybe gardened or whatever, but we'd get together, and there'd just be, like, that alpha bro thing, and so that's why I like to, like, I enjoy, like, making fun of these guys, but in a way that I'm not seeing. You know, I think it's important to make fun of these guys.
Oh, yeah.
Tell stories about it.
Well, you know, there's a stereotype that everybody has, and I'm sure when they're out there, that's immediately how they get identified by that stereotype. But then you also have an opportunity to, as characters, to also make them human somehow, give them flaws, make them imperfect, and maybe, you know, make people think twice. Everybody kind of jumps at their dumb, roided out meathead and just... It makes them evil, and it's that opportunity to make that evil person a little more human and maybe a little more sympathetic, and that's a cool thing. I love when that happens in storytelling.
Yeah, or like their insecurity is just as it's the same as anyone else's. You know? It just comes out in a different way. I mean, so anyway, we're talking about like where I kind of see myself kind of fitting in is where I enjoy this kind of niche of like having fun with bro-y literature for bros. But hopefully like I would love to have women readers too, but like I love playing around with the bro-iness.
Yeah, I like that. It's almost well, first of all, I stumbled across that, what would they call it, I forgot, bro literature, what they were calling it back in the day, but that Tucker Max asshole. And I read one of his books, and you know they were sort of calling that bro literature. I'm like, that is such shit. But then I read something like Carlton Mellick's Ape Shit, and you know it's sort of that idea of I guess a little bit along the lines of what you're doing, having fun with the bro thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Not being so goofy serious about it. So I dig that. Yeah. So this. You know, you do this story collection after you sort of figure out your voice in the whole thing. And how does it wind up with Rooster Republic?
Oh, what do you mean?
The bodybuilding Spider Rangers. That collection was put out by Rooster, was it not?
Yeah, yeah, that came out in September.
Yeah, so like how does all these, you know, this inspiration you got from BizarreCon, you leave BizarreCon, I guess you write a bunch of these stories, you know, where along the line did Rooster say, you know, let me check out your stuff or what do you do and put that collection out? Did you have it together? Did they approach you like, you know, maybe from BizarreCon?
They approached me and I was like, yeah, I've got some stuff. And then it turned out that it didn't really fit. But I was like, but someone actually wants to publish a book by me potentially. So I just kept plugging along and then put together the stories. And originally I had this idea of like Saturday morning cartoons, but with like bodybuilding humor and the idea kind of, you know, I had like the bodybuilding Spider Rangers was one story, and two stories, and another story, and it was called the Catholic Church Battle Bots.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had this picture of like all these goofy Saturday, like a bizarro Saturday morning cartoons feel to it. But I wasn't coming up with like nothing but Saturday morning cartoon characters. So then I just kind of put in, I had another idea for like a nihilist pigs in space. These gloomy bar, middle-aged nihilistic bar patrons in space get airlocked, and
I love it.
But yeah, that was my weird lineup, my quasi Saturday morning cartoon kind of thing that I put together, and yeah, and it's been great. It was a super smooth process just working with Rooster.
Good deals, good folks over there for sure. So now from Rooster Republic, how does the path lead you over to Clash Books and your new book, This is a Horror Book?
Well, so yeah, Christoph, he was just so supportive of what I was doing. Like he noticed like that I was being published in some of the horror anthologies, and he had invited me to submit to the Wu-Tang anthology.
Mm, yeah.
And that worked out really well. He liked what I turned in, and it was real smooth working with him too. So he asked me if I was working on something. And again, I said, I'm working on a collection, and I had some kind of goofball horror stories. And at the time I thought maybe I'll work in some of my straight, quote unquote, straight horror stories too, because they're kind of weird, and maybe that'll fit. But then the more I was looking at it, I was like, you know, I was kind of trying different ideas for the collection and then dropping it. And then in the end, I just put together what I did kind of by feel. And at the end of like 8 months or whatever, kind of looking back, it felt like I kind of went into this altered state, and I was just kind of putting stuff out and seeing just how weird I could make it. And how weird I could make it, what a weird ride I could make, but at the same time, keep people kind of keeping their bearings. Like there's this collection by John Shirley, the really, 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 really weird stories. Have you come across that at all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he just talks about just like, not just being weird for its own sake, but like life is weird. And I mean, how, you know, can we, these stories and take people on a really nutty ride and yet not lose them entirely. And so there were times when I was like, yeah, let's, okay, there's this component, like, can I twist that or turn that in on itself? How weird can I get this and keep people going? And one of those stories ended up in the Strange Behaviors anthology, which I'm grateful for them too, because that story and that and with Clash, that story was just so goofball odd that I mean, who knows, right?
They were the fit for
how long would it take me to try?
Right.
Yeah. So Christoph, he was like, hey, you know, send me something. So I put these together, and again, a real smooth editing process.
Uh huh.
So yeah, it's just kind of a bit of like luck and a little bit of just kind of being around.
I mean, that's great. You have that network thing going down for sure. It sounds like you're in the right place at the right time, talking to the right people who are just saying, hey, you know, show me what you got. And I dig that. Show me more. and it's leading to books for your story collections. I really dig, you know, the last two, I guess, your official Bizarro titles. This is a horror book, and the bodybuilding spider rangers. It's a bit of a tongue twister. They both look like cool books. I definitely want to check them out. And I dig like that vibe you got, that kind of just fun, goofy. How weird can I get this stuff? I read the descriptions and everything is a chuckle. So, I mean, I'm all about it. And you're getting in with Rooster Republic. Now you're with Clash. Clash is doing big things. I'm really impressed with what Clash has been doing for the last year and a half or so. And they're just continuing to knock it out of the park. So I'm excited that you're on that. I mentioned at the top of the show, like, it feels like to me, like your name I've seen around, but I haven't seen a lot of action. And then now all of a sudden I'm seeing like big action coming out for you. So I'm feeling like 2019 is the year for Charles Austin Muir. And, and I mean, January 1st, This Is a Horror Book came out like bang, right at the top of the year. You're off and running. So that's cool. What is there going to be more from you this year? Is there more in the pipeline already? What is the 2019 look like for you?
Yeah, I'm just starting work on a novel, so it's like a bodybuilding body horror novel.
Oh yes,
it's gonna be like obviously the body horror, a kind of a Cronenberg sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
With a big, you know, mysterious agencies pulling the strings, and you know, anything with bodybuilding. I mean, athletes, and especially like extreme athletes and bodybuilders, they kind of live with, depending on the choices they make, they live with potential body horror. I mean, there's a guy that his arm exploded from whatever he was injecting into it, and another like massive guy that had a big YouTube following, and he died. He was injecting insulin. Yeah. I mean, that's some nasty stuff.
I know.
Price you, and even like growth hormone, you got to like you stick that in their stomach.
Yeah.
You know, and like get ecstasy. You know, it's kind of like that's something I definitely want to explore in this novel, and just the what will you do to be great, you know, from that kind of athlete perspective, because that athlete mindset is now becoming mainstream too, where people all over of all levels are going into gyms and kind of crushing themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of have to go to the gym, and then from my own like perspective working with, you know, at a chiropractor's office, I'm more posturally aware than I ever was before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see good stuff and go, oh God. So it's like, it's not just a specialized, you know, population trying to become more athletic and going to great, taking great measures to do that. And I just really want to put that into a novel except with bodybuilders and the Cronenberg kind of shadow agency and a cult in there somewhere.
That all makes perfect sense, especially the Cronenberg body horror with body. The when you brought that up, the one thing that sticks in my mind, always frightens me about weightlifting, is there was this video from years back. You know, it was the type of thing people passed around with their VHS crappy copies of copies, and it was this mammoth man lifting, God only knows how much, just a lot of weight, and he squats down to pick it up, and then when he lifts it up, his like anus prolapses and just falls out. Just from the I mean, that alone is enough to make me say, man, I don't even know if I want to lift up that gallon of milk there. I don't want to blow out a gasket there.
When I used to compete, there was like the gear was the big thing. These super protective suits,
mm-hmm.
and there were shirts that were so tight that you couldn't touch 800 pounds to your chest.
Yeah.
So these things are kind of like, it's kind of like race car driving. Like people think, well, that's not a bench press. And it's like, well, it is. It's just a more technological bench press.
Yeah.
Extreme gear. That's how sports evolve. And these days it's a bit different. But I watched a guy. He dropped like 800 pounds on his neck.
Ugh.
Because, you know, those things are hard to control. I mean, you have to have the strength to be able to move with them and move the weight and lock it out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're off even a little bit, unlike if you fail without that kind of support, your spotter can kind of catch it, right? You're not going to fall that fast out of the groove in that weird way. But with that shirt, he dropped 800 on his neck.
Yeah, so. frightening to even think about and squirm. And if you could, yeah. you could transform that into a book. You got readers squirming at a horror story, and that's exactly what I think you would hope they want.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think it's as you know, it's everyone goes to the gym, or you know, the gym is more mainstream these days, I guess. And certainly functional fitness became a thing, and so now it's not just guys going and doing curls and staying away from the squat rack and women like hardly touching the weights, just doing the cardio. I mean, they're everywhere doing pull ups and burpees and deadlifts and cleans and all of that, walking lunges and all that functional stuff for better or worse. So I think it could be, it could be timely.
That's great. And I'm happy to hear that. Like finally you're working on a novel length thing, or have he had starts and stops on approaching?
Yeah, no, I've never worked on one before. So it's,
another process. But you got the ball rolling now, so it sounds great. I really look forward to all that stuff.
Cool, yeah.
Well, Charles, it's been a pleasure getting to know you. I'm glad we've finally been able to get you on Bazong. I hope you do get that cool-ass body horror thing written so I can get you back on the show down the line, and we can talk all about that and reminisce about the first time you were on Bazong.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
So I want to just congratulations on the new book and Clash, and continued success to you. And definitely when you get that new book out, make sure you come right over to Bazong so we can hear all about it.
Definitely. And thank you so much, Mr. Frank, for doing the show. And yeah, I mean, I've walked back and forth in my living room just doing stuff and listening, just binge listening. And I love your questions and the conversations and the range of people that you talk to. And so just thanks so much for letting me be part of it.
Oh, no problem. You know, I was almost going to let you go, but, you know, I got to put you on the spotlight here. It's last weekend was BizarroCon 11. You were there. So I wasn't. Just real quick, can you just give me a quick rundown? How was BizarroCon 11?
Oh, I loved it. If anything, it seemed kind of like more laid back, and I don't know if it's just because it was like after the holidays or whatever, but I just love it. And I've been, you know, it's my sixth one, so I've really gotten to know some people, a lot of the people, and there's more new people coming in too, and I feel like they're being welcomed, and I had a great time.
That's really cool. I'm glad to hear that. If there's one thing I've sort of been vibe wise, like kind of picking up everybody, talking about the aftermath is that it was sort of a more laid back experience for one reason or another. It sounds like nobody can really put their hand on it, but it was a little more laid back than I guess in years past. So I guess, I don't know, maybe the raucous level was down, or maybe everybody's just growing up or something. but still, a good time had by all. And of course it was, I thought for sure I might be able to make it this year with the push to January, but still it's just, for me, it's a rough deal to get across the country.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You want to go sometime. It'd be great to see you.
Yeah. I'm going to have to, I don't know, get popular or something, have people or something, just something to make it happen. Cause it is pretty difficult for me to cross the country and do all that. But I do, you know, absolutely want to get out there at some point, because every year I definitely feel like I'm missing out big time.
Well, yeah, it's a social media thing, right?
Right. Yeah, you're that. Right.
And they're tagging each other, and you're like, oh man.
Yeah. Oh, totally. You see all this cool stuff happening, and John Skip and Brian Keane and Rose O'Keefe and the Carlton Mellick, and if nothing else, I just want to get over there and corner Carlton Mellick, because that's the only way I'm going to get an interview with him for Bazong, maybe. Oh. And then he might still button up and not say anything, but at least I can say I tried. So thanks for the quick con report, and continued success for you, Charles. Thanks for being on Bazong.
All right, thanks so much, Mr. Frank.
a kindred spirit, the one and only Mr. Charles Austin Muir. So happy to have had an opportunity to talk to Charles, sit down, find out what makes him tick. And what I really, the lesson learned is that Mr. Frank is, has to catch up on some Charles Austin Muir fiction. It sounds like it's right up my alley, and I'm sorry I've missed it, but I'm happy to have discovered it, and I'm gonna make sure to run right out to my bookstore, even if that's the digital one, and pick up some Charles Austin Muir books. I know I am botching Charles's name, and before we started interviewing, I was gonna make sure I got the pronunciation right. He gave it to me. I've always said like Muir, Charles Austin Muir is what I always said in my head. But it's like Muir. The more I say it, as long as the more I'm botching it. So I apologize to you, Charles, more than anybody. It's a simple four letter last name, M-U-I-R, Muir. I'm wrecking it. So I apologize. And the more I try to correct it, I'm making it worse. So, go check out Charles Austin Muir's work. Oh boy. I'm going to quit while I'm ahead, Zongers. And, Zongers, I really appreciate you all taking the time to constantly check into the show, whether you listen weekly or just, listen in binges, however you listen. I always appreciate that you do that. What I also would love, if you love Bazong, you love the Project Entertainment Network, I would love it if you, considered giving as little as $1 a month to Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page, where you get lots of value-added content, including a show I do for Patreon called Not Bazong, where I interview the other hosts of the other Project Entertainment Network podcasts. I got one coming up really soon, where I interview the guys at Your New Opinion podcast. I love them guys. They put on a great, funny, entertaining show. I would get to sit down with them, and I had like my own little mini episode of Your New Opinion, and find out what makes those guys tick. So I hope, and you get access to that for just $1 a month. Plus there's other podcasts. There's the Rosamilia Road Trip. There's, You Gotta Be Kidding Me with Tommy Clark and, Skip Novak. It's a conspiracy theory podcast. And, Your New Opinion does their own really kind of dirty Your New Opinion show for Project Entertainment Network's Patreon. So like for as little as $1, you get access to a lot more podcasts. And there's videos, there's giveaways, swag, there's, you can win Bazong show notes or show notes for the other podcast. Just lots and lots of more stuff you can get for as little as $1 a month contribution, which in the end goes to help keep the free, podcast that you are knowing and loving and have listened to for years on the air. I mean, it all helps keep the network running. So that little extra jingle, if everybody just gave that $1 a month, man, we could do greater things. And maybe if everybody, all the Zongers out there contributed $1 a month, Project Entertainment Network would be able to afford to fly me out to, BizarroCon next year. So I could cover it as a responsible Bizarro journalist like I am. Right? That's right. Right. I am. I'm a responsible Bizarro journalist. Only if you give $1 a month, so that Patreon, or Project Entertainment Network can fly me out, to cover BizarroCon 12. Let's make that our goal, Zongers. And in return for your dollar, you get tons of great value added content. All right. Sounds good. Good. I'm glad you're on board. And with that in mind, Zongers, it's been a pleasure having you this week. Look forward to having you more again in 2019. Check back as often as you can, because I'm getting lots of great guests. Mr. Frank's going to step up his guest game in 2019. That's the goal. And I went through it before. Not only Bizarro people, but expanding beyond the reaches of Bizarro. Just fun, weird and wacky fiction, everything out there. And we're going to be hitting big strides real soon, Zongers. So I hope you'll keep tuned in to Bazong. But until next week and beyond, you are now free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
There shall come a podcast like no other. Defenders Dialogue. Marvel Comics' original superhero non-team convenes once again. Comic book writers and authors Brian Keene and Christopher Golden take us back to the 70s and 80s as they discuss Marvel's most dynamic collection of superheroes, Defenders Dialogue with Brian Keene and Christopher Golden, Tuesdays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
It was a time when we raced to the TV guide to see what was playing on Monster Movie Matinee that Saturday afternoon, and in some cities, that evening. It was all about werewolves, vampires, giant lizards, and those great Japanese monster movies. Relive it all every week as Jim Adams and Mark Maddox bring you Monster Attack. Monster Attack takes a look at those classic monster movies that we all grew up loving. Join us every week on Monster Attack, exclusively on the Project Entertainment Network.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.